It's as simple as this. I have a dream, said the man of God.
And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
And this week, President Barack Obama will stand on the summit of Martin Luther King's mountaintop. We can't confirm it, but we're pretty sure Dr. King is smiling. Today is MLK Day. Tuesday is Inauguration Day. The view from the mountaintop, all downhill from here. Let's hope Obama keeps smiling. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Monday, January 19th, and my goodness, John, the timing is just uncanny. MLK Day on the eve when the country is going to inaugurate the first African-American president.
I think he's smiling. Good morning, Adora.
Good morning, everyone. The ins and outs of the Israel-Gaza ceasefire today, the pomp and circumstance in the lead-up to the inauguration of Barack Obama, and Abu Dhabi is thinking green. Those stories coming up. First, these headlines.
The inauguration festivities in Washington began yesterday with a bang, or as Garth Brooks put it, with a shout.
You know you make me want to shout, kick your hands up, shout, throw your heels up, shout, everybody now shout.
President-elect Barack Obama grooved to that at yesterday's inauguration concert at the Lincoln Memorial. He said the historic monuments to Lincoln and Washington weren't the only things setting the tone for this inauguration.
It is you. Americans of every race and region and station who came here because you believe in what this country can be and because you want to help us get there.
Today, the president-elect will be volunteering with his family in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. He's asked all citizens to celebrate the holiday as a day of service.
U.S. Airways pilot Chelsea Sullenberger has been invited to that inauguration. He is the pilot who made last week's emergency landing on the Hudson River. Most of the jetliner is now on a barge docked in New Jersey. But NTSB member Kitty Higgins says tough weather conditions have hindered recovery efforts.
It's really slowing further examination of the site where the positive hit was made. And the concern is even putting down the sonar equipment and the ROV vehicle, they would be damaged by the ice.
Investigators have recovered and listened to the plane's black boxes. They confirmed the jet reached an altitude of just 3,200 feet when both engines died. Overseas, Israel says its troops will be out of Gaza by tomorrow. It's the first official mention of a rapid withdrawal. Hamas declared a week-long truce yesterday.
The Super Bowl will be the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Arizona Cardinals. That was the result of the two big games yesterday. Wall Street, of course, is closed today for a holiday. Oil is trading around $36 a barrel in Asian trading today. We'll have more about how the pumpers of black gold are thinking green. But we are thinking about Dr. Martin Luther King's mountaintop. The view from that mountaintop is quite amazing today.
And how do you reconcile what's happening in America today and what MLK hoped would happen? And what do you think MLK means to America today?
Do you think he's smiling? What do you think he would say about this week, inauguration week for Barack Obama, first African-American president in the United States? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Star Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org. And by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. It's not exactly peace, but it is a ceasefire, two unilateral ceasefires, first Israel's, then Hamas's. And you can still hear the sound of tanks in Gaza this morning. It's just they're leaving the territory through the Erez checkpoint as Israel withdraws some of its military forces that were brought into Gaza 3 weeks ago. The implications of these two ceasefires are not clear, although there are threats on both sides. Israel says Hamas should not rearm. Hamas has vowed that it will rearm. Joining us to talk about the significance of this is Jonathan Marcus, BBC diplomatic correspondent. He joins us from London. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Hi there. Not at all.
I guess the military significance of this action against Hamas is probably the big headline. The question of where Hamas and Israel are diplomatically seems about the same at the end of this conflict as the beginning.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, as you said, there are two unilateral ceasefires, and neither side is talking directly with the other, although we know that both have talked to Egypt, and Egypt, as in the past, has been a crucial intermediary. I suppose from the Israeli perspective, they will claim that they have achieved a re-establishment of their deterrence vis-a-vis Hamas. I don't think Hamas ever would have expected the scale or the ferocity of the Israeli operation that was unleashed. The Israelis, though, hope to be out, I think, within a day or so now. They're going to be pulling out quite quickly. Of course, the crucial question is what they leave behind, both in terms of the scale of the damage and the suffering inside Gaza, but also, crucially, of course, the diplomatic elements that will hopefully make a recurrence of this kind of operation unnecessary.
I understand that as many as 20,000 buildings have been damaged or destroyed in Gaza as a result of this. And of course, we know the casualty numbers, hundreds of casualties on the Palestinian side and Israeli casualties as well. Not, of course, the same numbers. But I'm wondering if it's widely believed in the Arab world, and particularly in Egypt, that Hamas did overplay its hand here and got a response way out of the scale of what they would have expected.
Well, I think the Arab world is divided, or at least to say Arab governments and regimes are divided. I think Arab populations, the man in the street and so on, probably have sat and watched this with horror and have sided very firmly with Hamas. Arab governments, though, are divided. The Egyptians, who had a rather testy relationship with the Hamas leadership in the months and weeks leading up to this conflict, I think the feeling in Cairo privately certainly is that Hamas very much overplayed their hand and brought this down upon themselves. Of course, something of a fissure has opened up yet again in the Arab world with the Egyptians, the pro-Arab, pro-Western countries in the Gulf, very uneasy about what's going on, very unhappy perhaps with what Hamas has done, looking very much to the United States to do something to rein in the Israelis. On the other hand, governments like the Syrian regime, Iran and so on, Qatar, very much more critical of those Arab governments who they say have sided with the West and in effect have sided with Israel.
I want to talk about the next steps for the U.S. in just a moment before you go, but it does seem as though the focus now shifts to the Egyptian border, where Egypt is going to, on some level, have to guarantee that Hamas doesn't rearm. Otherwise, this conflict will reopen again in a matter of days.
Well, absolutely. I mean, look, crucially, two important sets of things have to happen. I mean, clearly, the crossings have to be opened up on a much more routine and regular basis. That is obviously the achievement, if you like, that Hamas wants to see come out of this conflict. But also, as far as the Israelis are concerned, they don't want to see Hamas rearming. So they want something significant done about the arms smuggling that they say takes place from Egypt into the Gaza Strip. Now, clearly, a lot of outside actors are going to have to play a part there. There's always already been this memorandum of understanding between the Israelis and the Americans on steps that can be taken to reduce the smuggling. A number of European governments have pitched in and committed themselves to playing a role in all of this. But quite how that will actually happen, what physically will actually happen on the Egyptian side of the border to bolster Egypt's own frontier security is still not clear at all.
Well, Jonathan Marcus, thanks so much for joining us. At the very least, as you suggested, the U.S. Handoff from Condoleezza Rice to Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration will be done in the end zone as the clock is ticking on peace and this ceasefire in Gaza. Jonathan Marcus, BBC diplomatic correspondent, joining us from London and now to Washington and the inauguration. Adora?
That's right, John. Meanwhile, as there's hope there that the ceasefire will be successful in the Middle East, on an entirely different note, in Washington, there is so much energy and hope and pride for millions of Americans who have made their way there for tomorrow's inauguration. And guess what? Our own Femi Okeh is in the middle of it. Good morning, Femi.
Good morning, Adora. How are you this morning?
Good. What's happening there?
Well, I arrived in D.C. very late last night. I dropped my bags off and took my tape recorder out to a neighborhood known as Adams Morgan. It's a neighborhood that is full of bars and clubs. It's basically right now turned into a street party, very diverse. Everybody's heading down there to get a sense of what it might be like for the next couple of days. And I met up with a couple of young ladies. There was Tamia, Jennifer and Ebony, and I was walking past them and I heard them very loudly planning their events for the next couple of days. Now, Tamika is from Anchorage, Alaska, and she'd just come back from the Lincoln Memorial concert, and they were expecting to love Mary J. Blige, they were expecting to love Beyonce, of course, but my ladies came away new fans of one particular artist.
Garth Brooks put on the best damn show.
Shout a little bit louder now, a little bit softer now.
Garth Brooks put on the show. I now want to go to a Garth Brooks concert.
Femi, their enthusiasm is so infectious.
They loved Mr. Garth Brooks. They're now saying that they're actually going to go and support him and watch him play. But that was one of the free events, so that kicked off the whole of these sort of inauguration celebrations. There's also one coming up tonight. Aretha Franklin will be playing live tonight, and she's going to be at the JF Kennedy Center. And those tickets will be free. If you line up at 4 p.m. this afternoon, you will get in for free. But a lot of these events, the balls, the parties, you have to pay a considerable amount of money. Now, Ebony Patrice Laurel is an economic financial analyst for Wells Fargo. And when it comes to her entertainment this week in D.C., she's determined to shop around for some bargains.
We're trying to get into free places. Yes, because it is a recession.
$10.
Yes, we're not trying to go into the $10 spots. Anything that's free. So no love, because love is $50.
Well, there is a shot in the arm, a sign of the times, I guess we should say.
Yeah, absolutely. People are really beginning to look at their money and costing out how much it's going to cost them for the next couple of days as far as going out and partying. And my young ladies actually found areas along that strip along Adams Morgan where they can actually party and not pay very much money at all.
And the city's taking this seriously, right? I mean, they're really concerned about people not turning this into some rich person's event, correct?
Exactly, yeah. And there are events where you can actually go along for free all the way through from the Sunday Lincoln Memorial event, from the Aretha Franklin
event. That's
tonight, so that people can actually take part in it and don't feel that they're being left out and all the celebrities are just taking all of the big spots. So there's a lot of space there for just real people, and people have been supporting the president-elect to come to D.C. and take part in all of the fun and all of the festivities. So today, D.C. is going to be turning around into basically a pedestrian area. So there'll be hundreds of buses turning up for people getting ready for the big swearing-in ceremony. And also a lot of the perimeter of DC will be closed down in the next couple of hours so only pedestrians can get into it. And there's also been quite a bit of concern about the numbers of people turning up. I've seen estimates anywhere between 5 million visitors to 1 million visitors. And Jennifer, who currently lives in Maryland, she says that the huge number of people that will make it to DC in the next few days, that's what's going to make this inauguration special.
The amount of people are scared, but this is fun. You know what I'm saying? Meeting different people, different backgrounds, different cultures, having fun with different people just because Obama brought us together. You know what I'm saying? That's real. That's real life right there, and we really appreciate it.
And Femi, I'm sure that Barack Obama would be happy to hear exactly that. But do you have any sense of the numbers? It's odd that at this very late date, they still don't have a sense. They're talking about estimates from 1 million to 5 million.
And it varies. When it was just a few weeks ago, Adora, people were talking about 5 million and how the metro system wasn't going to be able to cope and how you really should buy your metro ticket to get around D.C. In advance of actually coming. And then I've seen estimates as low as 1 million. So really nobody's going to be able to know until, let's say, in the next 12 hours or so, when the buses turn up today, when people turn up on trains, just to see how packed D.C. will be.
Even though it's chilly.
Yeah, actually, it's warmed up a little bit. It's funny because Tamia, who is from Anchorage, Alaska, she goes to the University of Anchorage, she was saying that actually it's a wet, bone-chilling cold in D.C., and Anchorage is 50 degrees and much warmer than D.C. right now.
So that's better. Well, Femi, we're going to be looking out for your reports. Femi, okay, our own takeaway contributor, and we will wish you a good time there in D.C.
Thank you. I'll see you tomorrow.
And you should also keep an eye on thetakeaway.org because she'll be posting video and blogging and sharing pictures of her time in D.C.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.